Hey, everybody. Welcome back for season two of the Broken Banquet Podcast. This season, we've got more interviews with missionaries around the world, more interviews with authors who have written amazing books about missions, and more conversations about what it means for us to abide with one another. And yes, probably a story or two about Ashley taking a walk, eating food, or having drinks with someone who she now loves. We're so glad you're back. We're glad to be back. And we hope that you will enjoy this episode.
Hello, Ashley.
Well, hello, Will Bailey.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
It doesn't look like you're in Shreveport, Louisiana.
I am not. I lost an entire day, but I do believe that today is Monday, and I do believe that I am in Phuket, Thailand.
I wonder how many people have started a conversation saying that. I lost an entire day and woke up in Thailand.
Exactly. I feel like I may have done that the last time I came here, though. But yeah, it was definitely a flight plan that Shreveport to Dallas, Dallas to Doha, and that's a 14 and a half hour flight. And it was one of the nicest airports I think I've ever been in. They had a whole jungle inside. It was gorgeous.
Yeah.
And the lounge was quite nice. I really liked the lounge. Gosh. And then Doha to Thailand flight was 7.5 hours. So,
oh my God.
It was quite the journey.
Yeah. Wow. You must really love the people that you have gone to see.
You better believe it. I'm with the Russians, Olga and Igor Fatiev, and the Hutchisons arrived this afternoon. So it's been a nice reunion of friends and family.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Very good.
How are you?
I'm fine. It's Monday morning. So this kind of feels like a Monday morning. But yeah, things are good. This is our last week without teams before the summer busy season starts. So this is the last week until the end of August that we won't have volunteers here at the Missions and Ministry Center.
So holy
I've tried
cow.
To, yeah, I've tried to underschedule my week so that I could just sit quietly a little bit before we get into that. And then it'll be off to the races for about 3 months. And then we'll see what happens when we get to the other side. But it's good. Just lots of questions from people and, you know, itineraries and last minute details and stuff like that. But it's fine. We're good.
All the things that are in the job description for the director of Costa Rica Mission Projects.
That's right. It's all the things.
All the things. Hey, guess what happened the other day? You're not going to believe this.
Tell me.
It's a story that only happens in Thailand. So I had been flying.
Ashley, hang on a minute. Now, just remember what kind of podcast this is.
This is child friendly, I promise, or family friendly. It's all fine. Okay. So I was very tired when I got home from the airport or got to the house from the airport. And so I just laid down for a few minutes and thought, this will be nice. I just need a nap for about 30 minutes and then I'll be great. So I laid down and then I heard voices because we had all said that we would meet for dinner at 7 o'clock. And so I heard voices and I was like, oh man, I must have slept too long. And yeah, so I jumped up out of my bed real quick, but apparently my legs were asleep and I face planted on the ground. My face doesn't hurt, but my ankle and my foot are about 3 times the size that they're supposed to be.
What kind of a position did you fall asleep
exactly.
in?
Exactly. I don't know what position I fell asleep in, and I don't know how I ended up falling and hurting myself where it is. Like, it's so dark in this room, I would show you otherwise. But
well, now I'm wondering how many times conversations have started with, so I fell asleep in Thailand, and when I woke up, I couldn't feel my legs. Yeah. You don't have an incision anywhere, do you? You're not missing any organs.
No, happened to my kidneys.
While you were asleep.
No, okay. I'm good.
All right.
That's all. Let's get to our guest.
Actually, yeah, let's move along to the Broken Banquet. So our guest today Dr. Larry Dempsey has been a friend of mine since I was 8 years old. And I grew up with his kids at our church, and he was part of getting the foreign missions program at the church where I grew up in North Carolina started, has been on almost every mission trip that our church has ever done, was instrumental in the doors being opened to me as a youngster to start participating in these trips, which obviously, you know, made a pretty big impact on my life. And because he's been part of the missions program at our church for so long, I thought it would be really interesting to have him on and have him talk a little bit about how he understands missions has changed and matured over the years. I think it was about 35 years ago, the first time our church sent a team out into the foreign mission field. And in about 5 weeks, he's going to be bringing a team of 25 to Costa Rica. And so there's a lot of history in between those two events. And so, Larry, thank you for joining us from Enfield, North Carolina. Appreciate you being on the Broken Banquet this morning.
Thanks for having me.
And you guys know each other. One of the really fun things about this ministry is how different people who we know and love wind up in Costa Rica at the same time. And Ashley, you and Larry have both been here with different teams from your respective churches at different times. And so you guys already know one another, but glad that we all get to catch up.
Me too. Larry and I had a good chat before you came on, Will. But I was thinking, Larry, when I met you, I feel like you were recovering from, was it dengue? never mind. We don't have to talk about that.
All Ashley wants to talk about on this podcast is near-death experiences, either hers or somebody else's. But carry on.
Well, that was one that I actually caught on a trip to El Salvador, and as it turns out, it was the third or fourth time I'd been there, and as it turns out, I had caught the first time I caught it was I just had a cough and all, and they say that's not so bad. It's the second time that gets you, and it was we spent a month or so at various clinics trying to find out what I had, and that was the final diagnosis. So as my children said, don't ever, ever, and I have a dear friend in El Salvador, let's don't try this again.
Goodness.
Now I just talk to Brian when he comes.
Brian
being Brian Dubberly, who was also on season one of The Broken Banquet, and his wife also was on season one of The Broken Banquet. Yeah. So Larry, can we go all the way back to the beginning? And if I tell people often that First Church Rocky Mount, there were decisions that were made there that I was not a part of making that had a profound effect on my life. And those two decisions were, one, to get involved in foreign missions, and two, to do it in a specific place. And to really build a long-term relationship, you know, in a specific place, being Costa Rica. So can you take us all the way back to the beginning to how some of those conversations started happening 35, 6, 7 years ago?
I think it was about 1989, somewhere right in there. We had a change in senior ministers at our church, and the wife of the senior minister had been involved with missions overseas and their former church. And she started the conversation about getting involved, or First Church getting involved in a ministry overseas and establishing some kind of permanent contact there. And there was a lot of, that's the cricket you heard before. There was a lot of conversation about how to go about doing this, how to raise money. I remember there was a lot of talk about finances and commitments. And at the time, I had, or we had, three children aged anywhere from about 9 to about 13 or 14. I had a busy dental practice, and all this was leading up to the fact when everybody said, let's go, I had all the reasons in my mind not to go. And it was basically the pastor's wife who got us started on the first trip. A little bit of the reasons behind my history was, and I'll come back to this a little bit later, but in my mind, I had all the reasons I shouldn't go. Busy dental practice, kids in here, kids there. A good friend of mine who ended up going on the trip, we had hunted and fished a lot together. He kept saying, you need to go, you need to go. And I said, nah, I can't. I'm not going to go. So anyway, I didn't go. They went to Golfito, I think, was the first trip. And I remember when they came back, there was something, and this guy and I were pretty good friends, and there was something there that was not there before. Just not so much talking about the building that they did or whatever, but there was just something different about him. And I just kind of passed it off and went on my merry way with my dental practice. But year two came around, and they started, the church started fundraising, and my friend came back to me and said, you need to go. And well, I was prepared. I had all the same reasons. And he said, you know, on these trips we get a day off. And I said, well, that's good. I said, well, you know, what do y'all do? He said, well, you know, Costa Rica is probably the best place in the world to catch Pacific sailfish. I said, sign me up. And sometimes, you know, looking back on it 35 or so years later, you know, sometimes, you know, God will push us in a direction and we ignore it. He comes back and hits us over top of the head. And that's what this was. I'm not sure my reason for going was his reason for going, but it got done. And that was the start of it. I think it was about 35 years ago. Or maybe the summer's 35 years, something like that. So that's kind of how I got started.
Besides the fishing, what else happened on that first trip that you went on that when they came back around the following year to start fundraising and planning a trip, you didn't need someone to remind you how good the fishing was? I'm hoping there were things besides the fishing that made you want to come back. I mean, what was different about it, or what was your first impression on that first trip that was either maybe you didn't have any expectations and it was all just completely brand new, or what do you remember most about coming that very first time?
Well, the after the first trip, and I'm not sure, I think I went with the expectations that a lot of people have or had maybe at that time, and that we were going to go down and show these people in Costa Rica how to build stuff, because I'm sure, you know, that we know better than they do how to go about doing this, and we're going to take and we're going to do things for them that they cannot do for themselves. And again, remember, this is 30-some-odd years ago. And because I'm a little slow at things like this, it took several years for that to wear off and start being aware of what was really happening down there. And I don't think it was ever anything I did. I think it was what was done to me. Hmm. And it wasn't intentional. It was just the being there with people who, there were people that were my age, there were people that were older, and the impact on how they went about living their lives, regardless of what we were doing, mixing concrete or whatever, with how they went about living their lives that had the biggest impact on me. And again, over, you know, over 35 years, you get a little perspective on what's going on in overseas ministry. And when I look back 35 years, what I realize is it never was about the building. That was just a vehicle that we used while we were there. It was about the people and about the relationships that we formed with our friends in Costa Rica. I mean, I've been around long enough to see folks down there who were children when I first started going, and now those folks have children of their own. I've seen really good friends become grandparents. I've seen really good friends get sick, get really sick. Some recovered, some didn't. I've laughed a lot, and I've been laughed at a lot of my building. My building skills are somewhat sketchy, and I've cried a lot down there, just with people who were celebrating happy things and people who were celebrating really sad things. It's been a journey for me. And I'm reminded when I think about Costa Rica, I think about a word Will bought back from, I think it was South Africa or somewhere.
I know the word.
You do. It's called Ubuntu, and it means I am because we are. And that's my take on Costa Rica. But this summer is going to be special because Hadley is going back, and we're taking her 14-year-old and her 12-year-old with us.
Oh, my goodness.
So I'm excited about that. I've talked about grandkids a lot to my friends there, and now they actually get to meet them. Now, how that'll go, I don't know. But
three generations of Dempsey on the same trip.
I'm looking forward to it.
And look at how God used your love for fishing to make all of this happen.
It's like I say, I can be as hard-headed as anybody in the world, and sometimes it takes more than a push or a shove. It takes a crack upside the head or something. But he works in strange ways. And, you know, looking back over all those years, it was, you know, it all makes sense. So
I want to mention something because there's a lot there that we could talk about. But we talk a lot about the relationships between the volunteers and the community where we're serving and abiding together and all that kind of stuff. But there's another relationship aspect that I think is worth mentioning, mostly because it means so much to me. Growing up in a church who had this commitment to missions from the time that I was, you know, a preteen, opened the door for me to have a different kind of relationship with people in our church that I wouldn't have had otherwise. Because from 15 years old onward, I had this experience in common with a bunch of adult members of our church that otherwise I had nothing in common with, you know? I can remember realizing pretty early on how different it was when I would go over to a friend's house whose parents had been to Costa Rica. And as a teenager, would talk to them about Costa Rica and the people that we had both met and worked with and had in common, and how strange that was, because the other friends who were hanging out in the same house with the same kids, you didn't go and talk to your friends' parents. You know what I mean? Because there usually wasn't much in common. But for me, I had this thing. We moved to Rocky Mount after my parents divorced, and my sister and I moved there with my mom. And so growing up in a church where there were men like Larry and others who I had this connection to, who could turn into kind of mentors and role models for me. I can't say how important that was for me to have that in the church community. And it was this mission program that was kind of the catalyst for it. I don't think, even though I was going to Larry's house on the weekends to hang out with his son and, you know, spending the night and all that kind of stuff. But Larry and I wouldn't have had the same kind of relationship that we've had if it hadn't been for this missions element. I would have just been going over to a friend's house to hang out. But it was different because while I was at that friend's house hanging out, we're talking about Costa Rica and the projects that we worked on and the communities that we worked in and the people that we had gotten to meet and that kind of stuff. And so, I mean, I'm sure I didn't appreciate it at the time, but the older I've gotten, looking back on what it meant for me to grow up in a church who cared so deeply about missions on a personal level, that was huge for me to be brought into that kind of community, you know, and I think it's really unique. I don't know that there's a whole lot of other things that we do in church mm-hmm. that can sort of cross those generational lines, you know, besides going for Sunday worship, you know, Larry, how many other things do you all do that involve all three generations of your family at the same time doing the same thing at the church, you know, or in the community or whatever? There should be. I mean, you know, there should be. Church is where that should happen. Anyway, I just wanted to mention that. We emphasize so much the relationships between the volunteers and the communities where we are, but there's a lot of really important relationship abiding that happens within the churches and within the teams. I mean, Larry, think about the people. You've been down here, what, probably 40 times, because a lot of those 35 years you came more than once. And there are other people who have been on most of those trips with you. I mean, when you think about the kinds of friendships that you have with some of those people, I would expect that those are some pretty deep, meaningful friendships that, again, missions was kind of the catalyst for.
Well, I think the fact that the church has historically sent two teams a year, an adult team that goes in January and then a youth team that goes sometime during the summer. And it's not just me. There are a number of committed adults that go on these summer trips that actually have become mentors or friends of these youth. And it's the same kind of relationship that we'll have. It's that same kind of relationship. And also on the adult teams, people have gone on those teams that I knew their faces. I knew who they were from church, but I didn't really know them. And these trips have established a relationship where we actually know each other. And to expound on that a bit, we live part of the year on the Outer Banks of North Carolina in a little town called Hatteras, which is population of less than 500, and we have one stoplight. And that's just to get people on and off the ferry. There are no stoplights in town. And we attend a Methodist church there in Hatteras. And just this past year, there were three or four people on our adult team from the Hatteras church that went. And Hatteras has become very involved in not only participating in mission trips in the wintertime, but also in financially supporting not only Will, but people associated with his ministry in Costa Rica. For a church that small, and we may have 30 or 40 people on Sunday, they have made a substantial commitment to this ministry. So, in fact, we were in Enfield for just a couple of days, but when we go back, there's probably 8 or 10 people who are talking about going on the mission trip next winter. So it just, you know, you dropped a little pebble somewhere in the water, and there it went. And I've met people in Hatteras that really didn't go to our church there, and sat down and talked about Costa Rica. So it's the impact of something like this is just, it's just reaches out so far to so many different people.
And I'll say this, if you think back to our conversation with Hunter Farrell during season one, something that I brought up, I said, mission trips can be so life-changing and transformative in a person's life. And so how do we balance the we going somewhere on a trip and having God work in our lives in so many different types of ways and strengthening the bonds between not only us in a different culture, but us as a group, so that as we come back home, we make our church, our local church, stronger because we have abided with one another in relationships for a week. And you don't get that anywhere, any other time. But you have to balance that so well with how am I traveling to this other country to serve and be with people that I love, and making sure that is a healthy relationship and not just us going to be together as a group or for us to go and change ourselves or things. And so that's something that I've always struggled a little bit with of how to make sure that I balance those things and hold that intention so that it's a healthy thing for both sets of people. And it sounds like that over the years, Larry, that you have come to that place where it's not only bringing a group of people from Hatteras or from Rocky Mount, but now you also understand that wonderful relationship with the people you love in Costa Rica. So I think that having you as that middle person, that connection person, to be able to help the people that are going with you to see the value of not just being together as a group and not just having a transformation of your own life, but also to have this transformative relationship with other people in another place.
You know, it's kind of funny when I look back, we always had a Sunday dedicated after our trips to when the mission team would make a report to the congregation during a church service. And I'm a note taker. I mean, I've got notes from ever. I got some good ones on Will that we'll hold for a later time.
We can have a whole podcast. Just stay on after Wendy's.
I go back and I read my notes from these early trips. And most of the notes were always kind of a summary of the trip. They were always about how many concrete blocks we laid, or how many tin roofs we put on, or how many times I got shocked pulling wires. and I look at those over the years, and it didn't happen overnight, but you can kind of see how it changes about all of a sudden the reports that we gave to the church and my notes that I was kind of summarizing the trips on. All of a sudden we were talking about people. And we were talking about children being born, and we were talking about going to their house and having dinner. And maybe there was a little footnote about, and yeah, we did put some blocks up. We did this or we did that. So it just, and like I say, I don't think it was anything that I did. I think it was done to me by the folks there. And I've seen people, a couple of our friends from Hatteras who've gone on these trips, the change that it's made in their lives is just absolutely incredible. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of hard to put in words, and lots of times when I think about it, I get real emotional about what went on and all, because I think about, you know, dear friends I have there, and they're friends forever. I mean, forever. Mm-hmm. And as the years go on, the trips physically get harder. Not so much while we're there, but just the, you know, the getting up at 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning to make a 6 o'clock plane trip. But it all seems to get healed once I get down there. But it's been a good trip. It's been a incredible trip for our family, for me and Suzanne, and hopefully this second, third generation that's going to be on the trip this summer. it'll be the start of something for them.
How cool is it going to be for your grandkids who have grown up hearing about Costa Rica, they've grown up hearing you talk about Costa Rica? They know how important this is to you and Suzanne, for them to finally get to come and see it with their own eyes. I can't wait to be a part of that. You know,
they're excited.
One of the coolest things that I've experienced since I've been here, and it wasn't something we really planned because we knew it was going to be this cool. It's just the way things worked out. You mentioned earlier that very first trip 35 years ago was to Golfito. And I guess maybe 5 years ago, we had been asked to partner again with the church in Golfito and do some work there. So we spent a couple of years working in Golfito. The winter team from Rocky Mount worked in Golfito that year. And there were a couple of people who came, this was in like 2019, who had been on that very first trip to Golfito 30 years before. And one of them brought his photo out from that first trip. And you guys were actually able to go around in the community and find people who had worked alongside you all on that trip. And even the Marta, who's the pastor of that church now, she was in some of the pictures as a, you know, a teenager or young adult in this church. And to me, it was a moment that really, I didn't need to be convinced of it, but it just really brought home how important this long-term commitment has been. And as much fun as it would have been for First Methodist to have sent teams to a different country every time, every year, every time they left, but you would have completely missed out on that experience of going to that guy's house and knocking on the door and showing him that photo album and seeing his eyes almost bugging out of his head because he remembered that first group that came and worked alongside them there at the church and saw himself in these old pictures. And I didn't have anything to do with that first trip. And, you know, we didn't plan that second one as some sort of a 30-year anniversary thing. It just happened. But it was powerful to see just how deep those roots are, how I think it just speaks to the stability of that program and that commitment. It was just a really... And I know, Larry, you weren't part of that very first team to Golfito, but you went with some of the ones who were to visit those folks. And I would imagine for you, it was pretty powerful, too.
It was. In fact, we had one of the guys who, as Will mentioned, one of the guys that went on a trip had a photo album from that first trip. And we went to this gentleman's house, and he was... I think at the time of that first trip, he was the lay leader, or what we would call the lay leader of the church there. We showed him pictures of himself and this guy together and couldn't wipe the smile off his face. And the guy was like 90-some years old, and he remembered that team. And I appreciate that back because I can't even remember what I had for breakfast this morning. But... I mean, he was like 98 or something like that. You know, you go back 35 years and remember stuff like that. That's Mbutu. Mm-hmm.
Golfito is a beautiful community, and it will go down as one of my favorite trips with the people there. And maybe it's because we stayed on site the whole week or whatever the case was, but that will always go down as one of my favorite weeks in Costa Rica mission projects.
And Golfito?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's kind of hard to get to. I mean, it's a haul. It's almost a two-day trip to get there. And then once you're there, you're just there. You're not going to be running around much. And so, yeah, I think you're right. There's two kinds of people who went on trips there. There's ones who absolutely loved it and wish we could just go there every time they come. And then there's other people who asked us to never go back there again just because... so far and so isolated.
Well,
and
you know, Will, that's kind of that's kind of the story of overseas missions. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell people when they say, we want to go to Costa Rica. Or I know someone, I said, you know, you ought to think about going to Costa Rica with us. And it's not for everyone. You know, you may go, like you say, to Golfito or Changana or someplace like that and come back and say, God, I've got to go back there. Or you may come back and say, I hope I never go there again. And missions are like that. It's not for everybody, but I promise you, if you go on a mission trip, it'll change you. Mm-hmm. It will change you. It will have an effect on you. And I think we've had people go with us before who really didn't want to go back, but their idea of missions and their thought about people have changed them.
Mm-hmm. What do you think it is that, I mean, that changes people so much? I mean, you mentioned people in Hatteras, and I know there's people in Rocky Mount whose literally their lives were changed through this experience. There's people that have, I mean, they're very active in the church. They're very generous people. They're very friendly and mindful and wonderful people. But there's still, what is it about this kind of experience that you think drills right down into kind of the core of who somebody is and can sort of rewire things a little bit?
Well, I think that, you know, not a lot of people have really traveled overseas on mission trips. And I think that people have this idea about how smart we are as Americans, and we kind of have a corner on that market. Like I said initially on my first trip, you know, we think, you know, we'll go down there and we'll, you know, these folks are living in the 50s. We'll go down there and we'll show them this or show them that. And I think for the majority of people, that's kind of who've never been, that's kind of the thought that they have. And I think when they do go, or when we do go, all of a sudden we realize these folks are just like us, mm-hmm. You know. They worry about their kids. You know, they worry about their finances. They worry about their church. They have the same thoughts and all that we do. And just because they speak a different language or because maybe their roads are not as nice as ours, they're people just like us, mm-hmm. just like us. And if I promise you, if you go to a worship service in Costa Rica, you may not understand the first word, but I promise you, you'll know what it meant to be there. Mm-hmm. It's powerful. And I think when people go on these trips and experience that, experience these people as folks just like us, mm-hmm. and go to one of their worship services, it can't help but change you. Mm-hmm. It cannot help but change the way you just look at life in general.
Well, actually, we've talked a lot about coming to the table, mm-hmm. and that's really the point of all of this. The point of this isn't the construction work. The point of this isn't doing vacation Bible school with children. The point is that we come to the table together as equals, and that light bulb comes on, like Larry was saying, of realizing these are people just like me. They're were created by God just like me, and they have the same wants and desires and concerns and struggles just like me. And there is a place for all of us at this same table. And if we would just come and abide together, the other things, there will be lots and lots and lots of fruit of that kind of relationship. And sometimes that fruit might look like construction work. And sometimes that fruit might look like a feeding program. Sometimes that fruit, it might look like a whole bunch of different things. But, you know, like we've said before, we have to come to the table first, mm-hmm. abide first, experience Ubuntu first, recognize the humanity of one another and the value, the sacred worth of one another first. Mm-hmm. After that, we can start doing stuff together. But if we get that backwards, if we just jump right in and start doing stuff and are so focused on doing stuff that we never see the people, who are sitting at the table right next to us or in front of us, then we're never going to experience the abiding. And so, I mean, I think that's, it should affect people. I'm not surprised that that affects people, that every week we get to see people leaving here different than they were when they came. And it's because for whatever reason, whether it's cultural or habitual or whatever, we just don't take enough time to abide with the people around us. And all of the things that people experience here in Costa Rica, you can experience in Shreveport, in Hatteras, in Rocky Mount. But I think a lot of times it takes getting away from our normal routine and comfort zone and all of that kind of stuff to depend on other people. You know, when you're in another country and you don't understand what's going on and you have to depend on other people in order to eat and to stay healthy and all that kinds of stuff, you know, that's a, that in itself is a really new experience for a lot of people who are so used to controlling every minute detail of their daily lives. If getting people here is just sort of the excuse that we use for them to experience that and to wind up seeing the value of people who look different than them and speak different than them and worship different than them. But after having seen those things, it kind of clicks. Then to me, that's the whole point of being in ministry, whether it's foreign ministry, local ministry, any ministry. It's, it has to be transforming people into who God wants us to be and giving us the eyes that he has to see the world around us the way that he sees.
You know, Will, I remember you saying one time, you might have been in South Africa or somewhere, that you were taking communion. Mm-hmm. You talked about, you realized during the communion that you had been there before. Mm-hmm. You had been at that table before.
Mm-hmm.
And you might not have been physically present beside those folks up there, but you had been at that table. And I don't take communion now at our church, either here in Rocky Mount or in Hatteras. Yeah, I don't feel like I'm sitting or kneeling right beside Hugo and you and Yolanda, our friends there. We're in the same place. You know, I physically can't reach out and touch you, or can't reach out and touch Don Hugo, but he's right there beside me. Mm-hmm. Every time. Every time.
Larry, you just made me cry.
That's only happened like twice on the Broken Banquet. So congratulations, Larry. You're the second person ever who has made Ashley cry on our podcast.
No, that's so beautiful, because because I was sitting beside Will in New Zealand when we were having communion at Church Northwest, and it was another moment that he said, these are people that I'm with at the table every time I'm taking communion, and now I get to see them and meet them in person. And that's a beautiful image, that no matter what church we walk into in the world, that as they sit and kneel at the altar and take communion, that those are our brothers and sisters that we are also united with, that we're communing with, and then we just get to meet them. That's a wonderful thing about going on a trip like this, is that you get to meet the other people that you've always been at the table with.
Yeah, you know, this year in January, Larry, when you guys were here, we were working in Santa Marta. Last year, we helped them build a sanctuary in this community. And you all were one of the first teams to go and start that project. When you came back this year, the sanctuary was finished and we got to go to church there Sunday morning and have communion with your brothers and sisters in Santa Marta in this new worship space that we were a part of you know, seeing come to fruition. I love those moments. And we actually, you know, of course, as Methodist, you know, communion usually is a once a month kind of thing at a lot of our churches. And we've gotten the churches here to start doing it every week that we have a team of volunteers. At some point during the week, we will share communion. We have communion together all week long, but the actual sacrament of communion, that would be a part of the mission trip experience, so that it clicks, and they take that home with them. So it means a lot to me. That experience in South Africa was life-changing for me and gave me a perspective on my calling into the mission field that I wouldn't have had otherwise. And it just, it means the world to me when I hear from people who have been here who also experienced that. I love it. That's what it's all about.
You know, Will, we talked earlier about, you know, do you remember certain trips and stuff like that? I think one of our favorite places to go down there was Changana, up on the mountain down there. And it was it's a special place because it is just so isolated. But there was a very special person, minister there, Berto, that we got to know. But I think I remember I had been on a number of trips then, you know, and normally it's for our church, it was either a 1 or 2 week period there where we had 1 or 2 teams go in January. And we got to see a part of a project.
Uh-huh.
And when you're only there for a week, you know, it's kind of like you land and then you take off. And with Suzanne said, because I talked a lot about it, I said, geez, you know, I'd like to see something. I'd like to see a church finish down there. And she said, well, why don't you go? And it still may be the same, Will. It takes 6 weeks, 6 teams or whatever to build a church. And so I went. I went to, I think we were building the parsonage or the church, maybe the church in Changana, when I stayed 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And I was there actually for the, when we dug the holes, to when we had the first church service. And I stayed weekends with Ugo and Fanny. And that was kind of special because not only did I get to work with these folks, but they put up with me for 6 weeks. And I mean, I knew not just the people directly associated with the Coastal Recommission projects, but I knew the folks in that community. A guy took me fishing in a river one night, scared me to death. There were snakes everywhere. But it's things like that. I mean, that was really pretty special. And I think Fanny and Ugo were finally glad to get rid of me.
That's one thing I'll attest to, too, is that things change. The relationship deepens when the people you love that you've met on these trips, they invite you to stay in their home. Like you're not just going by maybe for a meal, which is very special in itself, but then they offer for you to stay at their house. And all of a sudden, the relationship just becomes wide open after that, that yeah. You've shared space together, you've lived together. I think that that's a testament to how God can use just the tiniest seed that he planted in you, Larry, from that first moment of wanting just to go fishing in another country and catch a really big fish to he hooked you in to the family of God around the world because he had this great relationship in mind for you and for the Costa Ricans to also meet you and have you in their hearts. And I sit in awe, and I say that because I've sat here with Russians this week and with New Zealanders this week, and the Russians especially, the first time they invited me to stay with them, like we were always just staying at the church, but then Olga asked me to come stay at her house. And then after she and Igor got married, that I would just stay at their apartment every time I came. And it just became that deeper, deeper abiding relationship that we didn't have to just go do something together, that we could simply just be together and stay together. And that's what you do with family all the time. And just a beautiful thing that God can weave together and make for us out of this wonderful mission world.
Well, Larry, thank you so much for sharing stories with us and sharing your perspective with us. Thank you, of course, personally for what you meant to me and to Yolanda and Isabella, to have the kind of supporting, faithful friendships that we've had from the moment that I came back to First Methodist Church in Rocky Mount and said, hey guys, I think I'm being called to the mission field, to be surrounded by people who kind of looked at me and said, Will, what took you so long? and to have that kind of support from before day one, really, I can't put into the right words to say how much it means to us, but you and your family mean an awful lot to us, and the church family does too. Appreciate you taking time out of your morning to do this with us. I know you guys are in and out of town, and it's been challenging to get some of the technical stuff worked out, but we really, really appreciate it. And Ashley, I hope that you don't twist any more ankles or fall out of any more beds, or I hope that you will know where you are at all times for the rest of your time in Thailand.
Thanks for that.
Please say hello to the Hutchies and the Fatives.
Will do. They're all in bed. Otherwise, I would have brought them in tonight.
Well, Larry, hey, I'll see you soon in July. Okay. Can't wait to have you here.
Yeah.
And all three generations of Dempseys. That's going to be fantastic.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear all about that. Will y'all just let me know how it all goes?
Mm-hmm. Hey, Larry, how would that go if we did an episode where we interviewed you, Hadley, Reed, and Simmons? Would that be amazing, or would it be a train wreck?
I'll go with train wreck.
Okay, never mind. And Ashley, we'll see you in June. So how nice is that? I get to see both of you guys very soon.
Well, have safe travels, Ashley.
Thanks, Larry. Good to see you again, and good to see you well.
Bye, Larry. Bye, Ashley.
Bye, Will.
All right. Bye.
You've been listening to The Broken Banquet, a podcast by Will Bailey and Ashley Goad. Music provided by Irene and the Sleepers. Join us next week for another episode. He's prepared the table. All things are ready. Come to the feast.